down to the left side. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com and listen to the live stream there. Also, you can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com, which is in the Black Belt, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there also. Full of new content, new podcasts of the different programs on Time for Awakening that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. TimeForAnAwakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we'll be in conversation with two farmers from the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association Incorporated, Memphis. Mr. Tom Burrell, the president, will be with us. Also, Bishop David Hall, one of the farmers that has a story to tell that's very important. I ran across this in some media circles, especially Black media, and I think that the listening audience needs to know what's been going on in reference to our farmers that'll be here to share with us this evening. The farmers filed a lawsuit against the Stein Seed Company for fake seeds being sold to Black farmers in the Black Belt. We'll have more information on that and other topics with the president of BFAA Memphis Incorporated. Mr. Tom Burrell will be joining us in conversation. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome back my co-host, Brother Richard, is with us this evening. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Elliot. I'm doing fine. And, you know, Elliot, I have to start off with in this moment of dealing with the transition of my mother, I just wanted to thank all of the Time for Awakening audience for, you know, bearing with me and my family as we go through this moment. But more importantly, and really more importantly, that the outburst of sincere, just genuine concern and condolences that me and my family really appreciate all the Time for Awakening and different members have done in order to show their empathy and sympathy. I just wanted to put that out front because I really in this moment really did appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we had to hold things down while you were here. We had Brother Ralph come in and pitch it a few times, and you know, it was rough, but I'm glad to have you back.
And I am truly glad to be back, only because what it shows is that and you know, that all of us realize that our situation requires us to constantly be in service and vigilant about the what we're about. And I characterize it as the liberation of African people, whether from the past or in the future, but knowing in the present, physical self is only a temporary moment here. So we must do all we can. And this interacting and going through and assisting in problem solving with the Time for Awakening family is a way we can do something now for the future.
You know, and what we're talking about tonight is just a continuation of this, these types of subjects that need to be talked about on not only on Time for Awakening, but in black media, period. We don't have time to waste time for foolish talk 6 days a week, the laughing and joking and the satires with a lot of the morning shows that you hear. You know, we got important work that we have to do. And this subject that we're going to talk about this evening with the farmers from Abifa, Memphis Incorporated, dealing with the fake seed that was sold to them by the Stein Seed Company is an important issue. It goes toward the heart of some of the things that we've been dealing with as a people, and it strikes at the heart of our farmers. Before we bring the farmers on, the president, Mr. Tom Burrell, is with us. And one of the farmers that was directly affected that bought a large quantity of the seed is with us also, Bishop David Hall. I want to play a clip of the press conference that was held in the announcement of the lawsuit filed against this seed company before I bring Mr. Burrell and Mr. Hall on with us. If I can find that thing and cue it up. I just want to play about 5 minutes of it to give the listening audience an idea of what's been going on. This press conference was held in Memphis on July 10th regarding the billion-dollar Stein Seed Company. So this is not just a run-of-the-mill, a small storefront. This is a billion-dollar company that sold black farmers this fake seed. Let me play some of this press conference before I bring Mr. Burrell on with us.
Some of the corporate individuals there in Adel, Iowa, they in turn sent some of their agronomists to the fields, and one of the first things that the agronomists admitted to is that, yes, quote unquote, you all have a yield problem. Farmers knew that they had a yield problem. Unfortunately, Stein did not take it upon itself to have any of these seeds certified, these allegedly certified seeds tested. So we then, on behalf of our members, sent some of these samples to the Mississippi State University laboratory, and they tested these seeds, or at least tested the harvested seeds, and those seeds, those germination tests, came back with a germination of 0%. What we're saying today is that the few remaining black farmers who have survived drought, who have survived tariffs, who have survived all kinds of natural disasters, floods, and other natural disasters, are now finding themselves having to deal with the gauntlet of systemic racism by not only the Department of Agriculture, but now seed manufacturers, seed breeders, chemical manufacturers, who are now weaponizing and have weaponized their seeds and are targeting those seeds to or toward the operations of the remaining black farmers. We know that when the GMO technology was introduced to this country several years ago, there was indeed an outcry. People were complaining then that the genetically modified seed companies would eventually take control of the seed market and consequently prevent individuals, small farmers, gardeners, from being able to use the seeds that Mother Nature and God supply. Genetically modified seeds are basically a process where God has been taken out of the equation. Mother Nature has been taken out of the equation. The problem today is that the expenses associated with farming are such, so the argument went, as it were, by the manufacturers of genetically modified seed, is they could guarantee high yields. They could guarantee that the world food supply would be increased, and that farmers who were not using their seeds were basically producing lower yields. So they convinced the government, they convinced Congress to allow them to patent what we call particular traits. In other words, if a soybean were an automobile or a vehicle, Stein is the manufacturer of the engine under the hood. They create the genetics that will allow that seeds to experience what analogously we would call additional horsepower. Horsepower in this particular case, if Mother Nature said that the soybean yield would be basically 20 to 25 bushels per.
I'm going to cut it there because I want to get the farmers in on this discussion. Let's go first to Mr. Tom Burrell, who is president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Burrell, are you with us? Mr. Burrell, are you there? Mr. Burrell? Let me try this other line here. Mr. Burrell, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me, Brother Elliott?
Yes, I hear you. I hear you now.
Yes. Thank you. We appreciate you for having this opportunity to express concerns on behalf of the remaining sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of individuals who were brought to this country 399 years ago, who were brought here in the industry of agriculture, but their numbers have gone from almost a million down to about 5,000. So we appreciate you and your station, your medium, for being able to give us an opportunity to further talk about the problems, the systemic discrimination that is plaguing and besetting the black farming industry.
You know, this is something that we've been constantly talking about on Time for an Awakening. We've had a litany of the farmers on. Mr. Eddie Slaughter has been here several times. Lucius Abrams, who's the one of the named plaintiffs from that Pickford versus Glickman suit. Ridgely Muhammad, Mr. Gary Grant, Ralph Page, who we just lost from the Southern Cooperative. It's a lot of farmers that have been on with us talking about this issue. This is the first time I've had the pleasure to talk with you in reference to what has been going on with some of our farmers in your area, and you represent a lot of farmers in the Black Belt. Before I get to some of the issues, Mr. Burrell, talk about yourself. Mr. Burrell, how long have you been farming?
Elliot, I was born on a farm in 1949 in a little town called Covington, Tennessee, which is north of Memphis, Tennessee. I've done a lot of things, and since then I'm a product of the Vietnam era. I attended college at the School of Business at the University of Michigan. I worked for some of the big three for years, but then decided to come back to Tennessee and got involved with advocating and trying to organize black farmers. And so I have been back into agriculture now for over 40 years. I am currently the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalist Association, and we lobby, we argue, and as you know from this show, we file lawsuits. We are a civil rights organization. We enforce our members' rights, and unfortunately, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, the only way you can do that sometimes is to file a lawsuit. So I've been in agriculture and advocating for agriculture on some level. I'm also involved in what we call vertical and horizontal integration, trying to make sure that we go from just the production. Black folks in farming, we never got past production. We never got past the field. We weren't allowed to get into processing, into further processing, into logistics, exporting, importing.
Okay.
And unfortunately, even retailing. We have our cousins in Philadelphia, New York, and Chicago who are buying food, Brother Elliot, but this country will not allow the corporate, will not allow black farmers to engage in the necessary elements to be able to sell that food to black folks. So we've been shut out of that industry systematically.
Mr. Burrell, because you just raised some topics there that we're going to touch on them tonight. But you mentioned that you grew up on a farm. So your father before you was a farmer.
My father and my father's father's, yes, my lineage, okay. My heritage is in agriculture. So, as I said, I've been involved in agriculture for all intents and purposes all of my life.
Okay. Mr. Burrell, before we get to the talking about the Stein Seed Company and what happened to some a lot of our farmers in the Black Belt area, the lawsuit that was filed in reference to the Pickford versus Glickman. As I mentioned before, we've had Mr. Slaughter on, Lucius Abrams joined us on different occasions, Gary Grant and others, talking about the farmers and how basically the lawsuit, a lot of the lawyers took the money, a lot of the farmers who had been adversely affected did not get to present their cases on the merits, a lot of land. The land portion of it, it was never about $50,000, but the land portion of it, the land loss was never addressed. Talk about some of this this mishmash of the settlement that was supposed to be given to our farmers and how they're still fighting to get what's rightfully theirs.
Yes, Brother Elliot, thank you here again for this opportunity. We know that in 1999, a federal judge certified a class action lawsuit as a result of a special remedy that Congress had created to allow these farmers to sue the government for, among other things, and particularly an agency in the government, the Department of Agriculture, which was responsible for doing, among other things, Elliot, making loans and loan benefits to individuals in the rural. You made reference to the Black Belt. Those loans included not only farm loans and ranch loans, but individuals in the rural, particularly cities that with the population of less than 50,000, would not go to HUD, as it were. The mandate for allowing these individuals was left up to USDA. So this USDA had offices in thousands of the counties in the South, the traditional Black Belt. And they were supposed to make loans. What they did instead was systematically denied black farmers loans. And those losses, those denials, led to, according to a federal judge, the loss of over 14 million acres of land that these farmers had acquired. Keep in mind, 45 years after slavery, African Americans had acquired over 16 million acres of land in the South. Today, we own less than 2 million acres. What's more importantly, again, is that during that same period, particularly in 1920, there were 925,000 black farmers. For all intents and purposes, that's a million, Elliot. We maintain that the cumulative effect of the systemic discrimination, both by the government and now by companies like Stein Seed, that discrimination has led to the demise, the slaughter of virtually all of those farmers. So here again, we're down, we maintain to less than 5,000. The lawsuit was supposed to correct the problem. What the lawsuit did, unfortunately, it paid the attorneys more than it did the victims.
Okay.
The other problem with the lawsuit is a lot of the heirs who were related to farmers who otherwise deceased and incapacitated, those heirs in Philadelphia, those heirs in New York and Chicago, who were related to these individuals, should have been able to have filed a complaint, but for the faulty advertisement, Elliot and Brother Richard, they didn't know that their rights were implicated. So the intent was there, but at the end of the day, the people who should have been benefited are still struggling. And as a result of this, as we said, we're down to about 5,000 farmers. We believe Congress should declare these farmers, black farmers, an endangered species, Brother Elliot. We should have protected status. They did that for the Native Americans. There are certain things you and I can't do on an Indian reservation regarding the land that Native Americans have. At one time, we know that the Freedmen's Bureau was intended to do just that. So now black farmers are left to their own devices, and they don't have the resources, they don't have the wherewithal to fight the United States Department of Agriculture, who was represented by the largest law firm on the planet, the Department of Justice. Companies like Stein Seeds are going to have what we refer to, Elliot, as silk stocking law firms. These are going to be firms who represent the major corporations. You have these farmers who don't have resources on the one hand. They're being victimized by these giant corporations, to include government and quasi-government and otherwise. They do not have the resources. Discrimination has become a blunt instrument for these individuals.
You know, before I turn it over to Brother Richard to get involved, you know, I saw a clip that you made on the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Incorporated site, where you were talking about the Black Belt phenomenon. Express that for our listening audience, because during what they consider the Great Migration, a lot of the people that you mentioned that live in New York, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Chicago, and other cities came from the South and still have relatives down South. In fact, now it seems to be a reverse migration going on, but we'll talk about that later. But talk about the Black Belt phenomenon as you described it.
Well, the Black Belt phenomena is a situation or a phenomena that makes reference to a part of the United States. We call it the traditional slave states. These are roughly 600 to 700 counties that stretch from all the way from, shall we say, Virginia, Georgia, the Carolinas, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and through East Texas. Unfortunately, this is an area where high poverty still exists. You have high infant mortality. You have high unemployment. But more importantly, there's a new frightening phenomenon now called dependency. This is, and according to the research of a young man at North Carolina State University by the name of Daryl C. Wembley, Daryl states that there's more poverty in the Black Belt, which is the Southeast, than all the poverty that exists in the West, the Midwest, and the Northwest combined. This is startling, Brother Elliot. Keep in mind that the war on poverty that was launched by the Johnson administration in 1964 has done very little to combat the poverty in this area. We believe that here again it is a result of not allowing individuals in this area to contract. Another phenomenon we believe exists, and that is there is a difference between, shall we say, black folks who are being included or excluded in red states as opposed to blue states. We know that here again the Democratic Party and that organization represent more or less or has more influence in blue states. Unfortunately, black folks who are in the South are still in the red states, so that's somewhat of a double whammy, because when a political party is basically in power that favors the African Americans, the locals who are resisting that are still in power. So the cumulative effect of this being excluded, even when we are otherwise included, has contributed, we believe, greatly to this situation. We believe that Congress should declare, we're going to ask that Congress declare here again, that black farmers and individuals in this part of the world should be declared here again, almost on the an endangered species. So this black belt phenomena is where poverty is still rampant. It is still steep. Unfortunately, it is an area where, on a per capita basis, Brother Elliot, we have more political representation in these states in terms of local and state officials. But even our local political clout has done very little to extricate us from this nightmare called poverty in the Black Belt.
Oh, wow. Brother Richard.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Slaughter, for bringing it forward to our attention in relationship to this here particular case. But really, the whole general question about we as Black people, we as African people, how we're going to assist each other in dealing, preventing the growth of loss of land in the South. One thing I wanted to touch on you to begin with is the association itself. What's the growth of the association? Let me start there. How did it come into being, and how has it been growing since it has been in being?
Well, the association that we have here in Tennessee is called the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, but we represent thousands of individuals around the country. We were responsible for getting Congress to hold hearings in 2004 after the first black farmers lawsuit closed. We went back to Congress, we lobbied, and we indicated that there were too many black heirs and farmers who did not get a chance to participate in the previous lawsuits. So what we do is advocate. We're finding, to answer your question more succinctly, Richard, that our membership is growing because people realize now, as the Supreme Court said in a landmark decision, how important it is for individuals to associate. Black folks in particular, we need to associate. We cannot fight as individuals, large corporations like the government. We cannot defend ourselves from large entities and corporations like Stein Seed. So we realize now that in order for us to prevail, we're going to have to associate. Sharecropping was so devastating. As you said, people left the South because there was no one filing lawsuits to enforce our rights. Sharecropping was a situation where sharecropping in and of itself is not bad. The only thing that happened to us, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, is we didn't get our shares of the crop. So here again, though, when the landowners simply told us that, wait a minute, we are not going to pay you, there was no one there to file a lawsuit to enforce their rights. So we had to load up the truck, as it were, and move to Beverly, to Chicago, and to Philadelphia. Isn't it unfortunate, though, that tens of thousands of individuals were forced to leave the conditions in the South on the one hand, but there was no organization there to file a lawsuit to punish those individuals who systematically took our land? So this association, we don't brag about it, but we maintain that if you are a quote-unquote civil rights organization, you ought to be suing somebody. In other words, you should be suing the people who are violating our civil rights. We currently are involved, and we are involved with another lawsuit regarding the Department of Agriculture called Boylan et al. This association is partly filing this lawsuit with the Steins. We are representing farmers whose land and heirs, the land is being taken. So, yeah, we need, the African-American community needs an association that is going to be able to enforce our rights when our civil rights have otherwise been violated. And for that reason, we represent and have members throughout the country who are giving us the support that we need to do just that.
And, you know, it's two things as you raised that, as you gave us that information on that. In the opening, you just heard my family, my great aunts and uncles were sharecroppers. So another perspective compared to just the point of not just land being taken away, but the terrorist action, because those who came to Camden from my particular family, when they took the crop to market, and they were going to give them an unequal price, and they demanded the fair price for the crop that they brought. That night, they came and killed my great uncle. And the rest of the 14 children got on a train and came to up north. So it's not just by legal persuasion or economic manipulation, but also by force that African-Americans had to leave the South in relationship to which giving up their land. And I just think that that's an important point that we have to understand now, that even dealing with, if it's intentionally, that these GMO seeds were given, if it was intentional, that's terrorism. Of another form. So we have to keep in mind that perspective. But what I want to push this thing about the association, so because I think that the audience, the Time for Awakening audience, should understand, if I got you correctly, that we could, as individuals, support this association. Is that true?
Yes, indeed. We are asking for individuals to support the association. What we want to do, of course, we are suing individuals, and we don't brag about that, but here again, that's what Congress, when they gave us that civil rights in 1866, not 1966, but our civil rights started 1 year after slavery. Congress came back and said it's not going to do black folks any good to be walking around free if they can't, A, enjoy the benefit of a contract, and B, be able to enforce that contract. When you made reference to your people in that were run off the farm, they had engaged in a contract. The problem, though, is when the white landowner violated that contract, there were no places for us to go. The federal court, the state court did not allow us to file lawsuits. So the only option that we had was to leave. It is important, though. What if we had an association then that dealt specifically with individuals who are losing their land, who dealt specifically with individuals who were being terrorized? So here again, the Stein Seed Company, which is doing the same thing in 2018, it's not going to get any better. We maintain now, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, that because USDA was able to get away with systemic discrimination, and the only people who suffered in that lawsuit were taxpayers. Not one employee from USDA was reprimanded. So other corporations feel that, yeah, we can get away with it too. So we need an association. There ought to be, there has to be a medium, an association, by which we can enforce our constitutional rights. There is a lawsuit, don't want to get too much in that, called UAW versus Brock, where the Supreme Court came back and said, it is better, the Supreme Court said this, that people should, quote unquote, pool their resources and come to court as a group. Most of the lawsuits that we've been successful with, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, are quote-unquote class action lawsuits, where it is easier for us to come together as a group than for me or you to try to fight the federal government, Stein Seeds, and these other manufacturers as individuals. So, yes, we're asking people to consider joining the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association so we can continue to fight and make sure that we, if nothing else, the people who are discriminating against us should have to pay. They ought to be sued. There's an old saying that goes, whatever a man ought to do, he ought to be made to do. And unfortunately, the way you do that is sue people. When black folk get behind on their child support, they take us to court and sue us. But here again, the African-American community has yet to develop an appreciation for that doctrine, even though that doctrine has been around. Had it not been for Ms. Rosa Parks suing the Montgomery bus line, we would still be on the back of the bus. Had it not been for Mr. Brown, Wilbur Brown, to sue Topeka, Kansas, we'll still be in segregated schools. We're not going to stop these individuals from taking our resources, discriminating against us, until we perfect an appreciation for suing them for depriving us of our constitutional rights.
And, you know, Mr. Slaughter and Elliot, I just wanted to bring up this perspective, as you, and I agree with you in the relationship to one of the tools being about, you know, providing that, pushing forward for class action suits. But, you know, or I would argue or at least put out there that underneath of that, as you gave those examples of Rosa Parks, is how well we are organized when we utilize the tools of class action suits. Because in any of those cases that you gave, it was those people being organized to be a part of associations like yourself that actually supported those class action suits, by whether it be by donation, you know, sweat equity, as far as skill services and networking, that made those activities successful, and they will make these successful too. And my last comment on that, to my question, is that when we talk about systemic racism, would you also agree, this, as you laid out, this ain't no new thing. So we can't act like this is something that Stein Company or USDA is doing just now. This is a continuous historical reality for us since we've been in this country, which raises my question to this. How are the Black churches and the NAACP interacting with the association from the South?
Well, here again, we have our other guest that I'm running your show is Bishop David Allen Hall, who is BEFA's ecumenical leader. I'd love for him to be able to say what the church is doing regarding that. But here again, we do know that at the end of the day, where you have 16 million acres of land that African Americans acquired 45 years after slavery, they could not read, they could not write, ebonically speaking, didn't know where college or universities was at. So what we're simply saying is that maybe we're down to 2 million acres, we've lost that 14, because somewhere there's a dearth of representation, whether it's in the church, whether it's in other civil rights organizations. But we are hoping that at some point in time, particularly individuals like yourself speaking out, that it would re-galvanize. Most of the gains that we made in the 50s and 60s was because of the Black church, was because of the NAACP. But here again, we are hoping that these individuals will come back. And as I said, I know Dr. Hall, Bishop Hall, would love to speak to that more in detail.
You know, I want to, I don't know whether Mr. Hall is with us.
Yes, I'm with you.
Oh, okay. Great. Because I want to transition into this Stein Seed Company. And just like I said in the beginning, this Stein Seed Company is not a little roadside company where a few farmers go and purchase their seed. This is a $1 billion company. So I would assume that it supplies seed to a lot of the farmers in the Black Belt. Go ahead.
Not only do they supply seeds to farmers in the Black Belt, Stein is, and as I was saying in the clip that you played, if a soybean were a vehicle, if it were an automobile, a soybean were an automobile, the engine under the hood, Brother Elliot, is manufactured by Stein. So Stein sells the engine to other car manufacturers, as it were, to other seed manufacturers. They sell their seeds to Monsanto. They sell their seeds to DuPont. They sell their seeds to Pioneer. They are the premier trait manufacturer. They have patents on what we call traits. Mother Nature gave the seed its germ plasma. Stein developed a trait, genetically modified seed, that gives that seed the additional horsepower, as it were. It is like a seed now that can go from 0 to 60 miles an hour in a split second. So Stein, the unfortunate thing about what they are doing is it affects other farmers who may not have bought Stein seeds directly, but may have bought them, quote-unquote, indirectly, which implicates the other the GMO manufacturers, the Monsantos, et cetera, et cetera. So the systemic part of discrimination has always been individuals who were stooped, who were resolute on creating criminal activity, have always been able to position themselves, to embed themselves into legitimate otherwise legitimate corporations, use those corporations' resources to commit crimes that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. And that's what makes it so hard, because the average public, the Black person, won't see a Stein. What we see, Stein is what is called, they manufacture the seed. The seed is going to get processed and put into something else. All the poultry, all the beef, all of the other shall we say, food stocks that you will consume, you are consuming some of Stein's product. When we eat the hamburger, Stein sold the manufacturer the feedstock, the soybean meal. When we use any other products, when we eat eggs, when we eat poultry, the Stein seeds are inherent in that. So the black community won't see the Stein as such. They're embedded into these other legitimate so-called other organizations. And that's what makes the systemic discrimination so foreboding and frightening. There's an enemy out there that you really don't see.
We're in conversation tonight with Mr. Tom Burrell, who is president of the Black Farmers and Agricultures Association in Memphis, Tennessee. Also, Bishop David Hall, who is the ecumenical leader and also an activist farmer with the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists organization. Mr. Hall, I want to get you involved in the conversation because you personally purchased over $100,000. From what I understand, in seed that you've found out was fake. Now, walk our listening audience through this. How did a lot of the black farmers start finding out that their seed was fake?
Well, basically, you purchase and contract seed, and as the year goes on, you look for your yield to come.
Okay.
It is the selling of that seed that you then make your revenue. Now, along the way, there are certain marks that you will notice about how long it takes for that seed to germinate, to come up after you place it in the ground. We obviously here at VIFA, with our company, which is the International Trustee Group, which I am the president of, and Mr. Burrell is my business partner, we contracted for more than $90,000. Plus, we also have some other black farmers that are small, don't have the financial means and the wherewithal. We incorporated them, and we are developing them entrepreneurially as farmers. Well, as time goes on, you begin to notice that the plants don't look good. They're not strong, that they don't develop properly. The pods are flat. They only have one seed in them. It means that your yield is substandard. Now, one thing is for certain, that when a certified seed is sold to you, you expect that it will give you the full germination, that out of 100 seeds, you're going to expect 95, 96, 97 of those to come up out of 100 put in. But when your best one is 77 and your worst one is zero, you know that that's not the seed that you contracted for. Somewhere along the line, along the chain of custody, somebody tampered and stole your seed. So we're in that same situation. We discovered Stein at the 67th annual Mid-South Farm and Gin Show in Memphis. And many of our young people, our young farmers, brought it to us that here is a certified seed. After listening to and examining their website, talking with their sales personnel, et cetera, we thought that, and then checking Stein out, Stein is an amazing company. A $7 billion corporation, as Mr. Burrell has given such an eloquent statement about. But at the midway of the year, we started to see our crop failing. At the end of the year, we noticed that we were not going to be the recipient of the promise, as that crop looked bad. So this is why when we went to the field, we called Stein, and they sent their agronomist down. And I had already, prior to that meeting, sent a sample of the seed that was produced, the soybean that was produced, to an independent lab. And I told him he could go any place in this field that he wanted and cut, because I didn't believe that this was the certified seed that we contracted for. And then I told him we're going to then also send the seed to Mississippi State University, which has an outstanding school of agriculture and lab. And their salesperson, I mean, their agronomist said, that's a great school. We sent it there, and to our surprise, zero germination, which was, of course, substandard. Now, we are suing because how can someone, and listen, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it takes to run a farming operation, we have more than 3,000 acres, but you cannot get 10, 15 bushels an acre when you have the tractors and the plows and the implements that we have? You have to sustain that operation with 50, 60, 70, 100 bushels per acre. This bad seed, this fake seed, robbed us of our ability. And we believe that it was worthy of investigation by the FBI. And one of our state representatives, State Representative G.A. Hardaway, says it is a consumer issue. And he is going to bring to bear pressure from the state of Tennessee. And I hope that they will listen to him, because the food chain is in jeopardy if it's not addressed. And so let me say this, that we sued, and there was a quote that is so eloquent and so outstanding. We had the energy, why? Because it was not time for us to wait, but to jump in. There's a quote that says, on the plain of hesitation lie the bones of countless millions who at the eve of victory sat down to rest, and resting died. We thought that when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated and the full promise and weight of his words would take hold in his country, that we were out of the woods. But no, no. Believe you me, we are living in a dire time, a situation where we have to be constantly vigilant. Bad seed produce bankruptcy. Bad seed produce disappointment. It dulls husbandry. It kills entrepreneurial spirit. We have sued. Now, I am a bishop in the Church of God in Christ, but I'm also a farmer. I'm also an entrepreneur. And when I contract with that company for those seed, I expected not charity, but I expected the full weight and measure of their intellect, their business acumen, to be put in that field, and I get a harvest, which I would then sell and stay in business. Instead of that, I got the wrong thing. I got disaster. I'm suing. Yes, and I'm encouraging other black farmers, white farmers, in fact, anybody that has had those seeds misappropriated, stolen, taken, or the wrong ones delivered, whatever. We want the FBI to get into this, because this nation could be in jeopardy if these GMO seed companies take those seeds and weaponize them. I believe that.
Let me go to the in fact, well, Richard, you want to jump in? Because we've got a couple calls waiting. I want to take a couple calls.
No, the one question that came to me was, do you find that other, is there any other farmers besides yourself that you have gotten feedback that have gotten this type of deplorable seed, GMO seeds? Other than the ones, I mean, like, was this just do you speculate, and I don't know how far you can go into it, is this just something that was just, like you said, targeted to your purchase, or were other farmers, other places, since Stein is such a big company, also got this defective GMO seed? Have you got any feedback yet from that?
Our phones in our office have rung off the hook with people asking and making inquiry and asking about our seed and our situation. We have what is in effect a class action lawsuit. I'm anticipating, and through all our website and Facebook, et cetera, from the comments across the country, from black and white people, that there is a great interest in this. Do you not know that just recently the Syngenta corn settlement for $1.5 billion was just now settled? And those corn farmers, which used the wrong kind of GMO seed and then tried to sell them in China, they had devastating financial losses. And now they are in line for a $1.5 billion settlement from Syngenta. Now, if they can get that, we can. And I would think that dozens, if not hundreds of people, may have had a like situation, similarly situated as I was. I thank God that I had the cooperation and financial muscle to stay in business. So some guys are utterly ruined and destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that if they're out there, they're going to call and they can join this lawsuit.
Let me go to 267. 267?
Hey, good evening, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard.
How are you,
yes, sir?
Your guest. Hey, how you doing, Rich? Glad to see you back, man. Sorry to hear for your loss.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And I would like to ask the guest something about what happened to my maternal side of my family. My maternal grandfather was a farmer in the 60s and the 70s. And now and this has happened to the farmers today. I've seen in my lifetime, I remember they used to grow crops. They had tractors in the 60s. They had livestock. Then all of a sudden, the crops went bad one year. And next thing you know, developers was asking to buy the land from them. I wonder if this is an ongoing problem, because if it is, I'm going to have to get in touch with my mother and see if she could join your membership to research what happened to her father and her brother's land. I mean, they own so much land up and down this place called Chapel Mullen. And for a few years, there was like a drought, and where just everything, just weeds grew up. They had a few bad years, and they just lost it, man. And I'm trying to figure out if this has been going on for decades, and it just happened that they got bold about it, and we're just catching on to this situation. Could you elaborate on that for me, please?
Yes, could I, Brother Richard? We talked earlier about the need for an association. Keep in mind that traditionally, maybe the association, Civil Rights Association, this is not an indictment against anybody, maybe they were not tuned to the problems, the unique problems of black land owners. So therefore, as the caller said, it happened to his folks. Keep in mind, you bring 5 million, you bring 5 million individuals or so to this country, and you have them to do nothing but farm. They farmed and farmed, such that in 1920 you still have over 1 million of them, and now you only have 5,000. Something went wrong. And I know we've given a lot of quotes, but I'm reminded, Brother Richard, of another quote that was given by Lyndon Johnson in 1965 when he was trying to get Congress to pass the Voting Rights Act. He said, among other things, that every device for which human ingenuity is capable has been used to deny the Negro his rights. So when we talk about the caller, it may be Stein seized today. It may be another device next week. It may be another device with another family in Georgia. But human ingenuity has been able to create a device. Every time black folk acquire X, then there's a device. We believe that the black farmer is a business that has survived where other black businesses haven't. The hair care industry, the black supermarket industry, the black construction industry. There have been devices used to put individuals out of business in every industry. So what we are saying is, yes, we need an association that deals specifically with these subtle devices. As we said, individuals have been able to position themselves inside of corporations, position themselves inside of the government to wreak havoc on individuals at the local level. And the accumulative effect of this is how we've lost so much land. We believe here again, as the caller is saying, until we get an agency and organization to deal specifically with these problems, we believe that these individuals, corporations, and otherwise will continue to get slide home scot-free with total and complete impunity after violating our civil rights.
Yes, sir. And also, I want to bring up two more points. I was talking to an elder today, I also sent him out an email about what the discussion is going to be about today. And he was saying, like, he remembers from his lifetime where the state of South Carolina wouldn't even sell seed to the black farmer. So he said, so what he was trying to tell me, this has already been a a crisis that we're just waking up to. And my last point I wanted to bring up, and why haven't the, you know, and I know why, but I'm just saying this sarcastically, why haven't our news media picked up on this Steinseed fraud case? Because it is fraud, and it's against the law, and that's what I was saying a couple of weeks ago. We keep looking to these people who put the law on the books. It's against the law to sell anything fake. They have counterfeit raids every day. Yet, situations like this continue to happen. So these are lawless people that we're dealing with. And this audience, we're quite aware of what we're dealing with. A lot of us aren't, but this audience that listens to this radio station are quite aware of the lawless people, and including some of our politicians that don't give, they talk about the border situation, but they won't even pick up the mantle for this situation that's a total disgrace. So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, the association is about to happen. I'm going to have to talk to my mother because we might be able to investigate and see why my uncle's and my grandfather's farms just dried up, and then the developers started knocking on the door, which my family still own the land, but the developers are still there looking to grab that land. So, you know, I just had to call in and ask you, why haven't mainstream media, which I know the answer, but I want you to say, why haven't this been discussed on World News Tonight and everything else, getting the publicity that it really deserves? And
may
I'll
I say something
to
answer that?
Yes, sir.
This is Bishop Hall. We have gotten tremendous feedback from this. Our publicity department has taken the opportunity to send our press releases out, and we are awakening numbers of individuals to the plight of the black farmer. Now, it's not that people are not aware, but their sympathies and their energies lie with the urban unrest and the urban situation, our crime, our poor education in our inner cities, etc. But if you go to the Black Belt, you'll see the same object poverty, low standards, unemployment, no education, etc. There has to be a totality of a comprehensive look at what black people in this country are going through. And we would find that if we would reach our arms out and touch one another, whether in the rural or in the city, that we have common cause. Let me say this and bring it to close. He said something about losing land. President Trump is now pressing for a rural prosperity initiative. And I applaud that because there are so many black people in the rural area who have been set aside, and we seemingly don't count. If he's going to say, let's enrich the rural, let's bring greater bandwidth and information technology into the urban areas, I mean, to the rural areas, black farmers and black individuals who are yet landholders need to be aware of that. Because if they put those big cell towers on this land that black people still own, that land will be up for grabs if they're not careful. If they are unaware that that tower is coming to their land, they may let that land go at a cheap price. Why? Because they're not cultivating it. It's air property. Maybe somebody will get slick and sell a piece of it. Knowledge and information is something that we need. And we need it in the rural as well as the urban, because we are here and black farmers are going nowhere, because therein lies a generation of new entrepreneurial people farming and up to scale truck drivers, up to scale product development, up to scale management, bookkeeping. There are all kinds of things that can be done through a farm-based economy. And guys who have been put in prison and locked away, I'm hoping that the Steinseed lawsuit that we have generated will give us the exposure necessary to show that there is a vast amount of opportunity out there. We're not going to sit down. We're going to pursue this lawsuit. with all vigor, and maybe the issues of land grabbing and the frustration of vacant property and air property situations that have been unresolved, maybe we'll find new energy to take these things to task and solve some of our issues. Black people have to solve these issues, and it starts with us.
Sir, I appreciate you, sir. I'm going to continue listening if there's any way I could contribute to the law.
Thank you, my brother.
I know they cost money. You know, just give out your information, and I will be there. And I promise you that.
Thank you for your
All
call.
Right, thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for your call, sir. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News? Newport News, are you there? Okay, let's go to 803. 803?
I thought you were going to unmute me.
Okay, yes, you're there.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to unmute me, so I didn't. I'd first like to say I applaud these gentlemen. I'm going to try to give a quick synopsis. From 1989 to 1992, I'm here in York County, Virginia. I fought for a 40-acre plot that was in my family for over three generations. And one of the gentlemen brought up the fact that aired property and everything. A two-year battle to track down that different courts had allowed heirs to sell property or pieces of the property illegally without notifying other members, and went to the disposition, it's supposed to be final resolution here in the state of Virginia, and got that case stopped so that my family could hold on to the land. And one of the things I wanted to say is, in investigating this thing, I found out that the same tactics were used throughout the South. And I'm here in Virginia. And when I started getting in touch with people all down in Alabama and Georgia, I found out that what was happening is the courts and even the judges were corrupt. And because what was happening is most of this money that was federal money sent into these areas was block granted. So the locals were in control of it. They wouldn't even allow black farmers to go to the seed companies and get any kind of seed and stuff, you know, where you could get it without paying cash and you could put it against your farm. They weren't even allowing that. So they were blocking them out and then using planning boards and planning commissions to rezone the land and then take it under eminent domain. I fought a case for over 2 years. I got records stacked about 6 foot high still. Unfortunately, my father passed away in 93, and he didn't live long enough to see the full disposition of the case. But what I'm saying to you is, if there's anything I can do once I get in touch with you to help with research or something, I don't have a lot of money. If there's anything I can do to help advance this or even go around the country and help get some people involved or educate them on it, I'm all for it, because it took me almost a decade not to be fuming about this. I mean, my case was to the point that when the judge tried to rule against us, I actually showed him paperwork where he had to recuse himself because he had represented the state when the state took about an acre of the land to run a road through. So I understand the vile tactics that the government and the corporations used to steal. And they stole. Matter of fact, I look at a statistic. Soybeans were crop in the United States was 87.3 million acres in 2016. So you can look at thinking that if blacks lost 14 million acres, imagine what percentage of income that could have provided for our community. I applaud your work, and please leave some contact so I can try to see if there's anything I can do to aid you, gentlemen.
Richard, can I jump in?
He yes.
made reference to the loss of land. And when we say we are losing land, there are state laws that makes it easier for unscrupulous investors to come in. Let's assume that your grandparents had 100 acres or your parents had 100 acres, and they had five or six children. Unfortunately, in our community, we pass on without wheels. So when someone died on land without a will, the state did dictates who will own that property. And then two generations downrange, you're going to have people who will own a 1/30th or 1/32nd. What happens is, unfortunately, one of those unscrupulous investors will purchase an undivided fractional interest because you don't own a 1/5 of 100. You own 1/5 of every house, every tree. And then that unscrupulous investor will then purchase one of those undivided fractional interests with the intent of going back to court and filing a claim to have his portion, what is called partitioned. He then want his part partitioned out. State law says, okay, we could partition one of two ways. We can either give you, Mr. New Land Owner, your 1/32nd in kind, but that would be difficult, so it's easier to sell the whole farm, and you get 1/32nd of the property. But this unscrupulous investor knows one thing. He knows that, A, no bank is going to allow the remaining black heirs a loan. He then, the new investor, will be the only person who will be able to get a loan. Therefore, when the farm is sold, as we call it, on the north side of the courthouse steps by the local sheriff, black folk won't be able to even buy their own land back, even though they may own 90% of the property. And this new individual is going to be the person who will have resources, will have the cash to buy these individuals out. And here again, that land will probably be sold, again, what we refer to at a fire sale. So this is another trick. This is another device, as I was making reference to, that Johnson said has been used to deprive the Negro of his rights. So here again, without an association, we need, I think you were saying, to paraphrase the gospel, we need someone standing on the wall because the sword is upon the land. The sword is taking land from black folk. There was a man who said that God kept black folk on the farm until after the Depression. God knew that if black folk had been in the city of Chicago and New York during 29 and 30, there were no food stamps. There was no ADC. We would have starved on a wholesale basis. As bad as farming was, Brother Elliott and Brother Richards, God kept us on the farm in South Carolina and North Carolina and Georgia so that we could at least eat. What if something were to happen to this economy today, and then all of a sudden we are not able to get the benefits that the government is otherwise giving out? The African-American community could very well perish in a matter of 90 to 100 days. So what we're also arguing is we need an association. We're going to try to get laws passed to make it unlawful for states to use these extra legal means of partitioning land. We're going to have to get Congress to pass laws that declare the remaining few black landowners, the remaining few black farmers, as distinct. We cannot allow people just coming into our community day after day after day, taking what our great-grandparents fought for. And unfortunately, all the land that has been taken has been paid for. But here again, these are some of the things that this association will be asking members of Congress. We want the black Congress to take the lead in this matter. But here again, we thank you, Brother Elliott and Brother Richard, for giving us this opportunity to put these issues in perspective.
You know, we're going to take a brief break. And can you stay just a little while longer? Because I want to talk about some solutions to this. And
Mr. Elliott, I have a question. I would like to make a remark. Is that okay?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Patricia Rogers of Public Relations. I am the official agency for the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association that's headquartered here in Memphis. But I want to make give a response in reference to what the gentleman said earlier about this story. This story about the black farmers allegedly being sold fake seeds by Stein Seed Company has gone viral, okay? It's been on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. We were in USA Today in the Thursday edition, the print edition of In the Money section. The Washington Post has done an article of the Charlotte Observer, the Des Moines Register. It's everywhere. If he goes on the internet and just put in black farmer sold fake seeds, he'll see everything will come up as far as the publicity. The Memphis media took that press conference and it went viral. And we appreciate you having us on your show today. And for your listeners, they can go to BFA on Facebook, BFA, B-F-A-A hyphen Memphis. And they also can go to the website at www.mybfa.us. So this story, it's out there. And we appreciate you having us on today as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. We're going to take a brief break. And I want you guys, you men, to stay over because I want to talk about some of the solutions I seen that you were all already doing. But an appeal that you made, Bishop Hall, to some of our folks in the North, I want to play that clip. And then I want you to talk about some solutions because I think it's important. Can you stay over a little bit longer?
Certainly. I'd be glad to.
Yes, sir. Yes.
That'll be good. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, you know what? I might have to reboot these phones because some of these things are acting up. Let's see how things work out after the commercials. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Mr. Tom Burrell, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association Incorporated in Memphis, also activist farmer and the ecumenical leader of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association of Memphis, Bishop David Hall, is with us in conversation. We'll be right back. Listen, if any calls drop during the commercials, just please call back because some of these phones are acting up. But we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. And you can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
This conference is being recorded by the organizer.
With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882.
This conference is being recorded
by the organizer. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
And I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to a group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee. Mr. Tom Burrell is with us in conversation, also an activist and farmer, and ecumenical head of the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association in Memphis. Bishop David Hall is with us also. Before you men leave this evening, I do want to talk about some solutions that are right before us and get you men to kind of weigh in on that. But before I do, I want to play a, I want to play a clip from you, Mr. Hall, in reference to farming and a message to our brothers and sisters, because we notice now there's a reverse migration, so to speak, because gentrification up here in the north, and it's happening in the south also, but a lot of our people are coming back south, and hopefully some of our people that are coming back south will get involved in farming. The stats show, and I just want to read a few of these. In 2012, and this is from the Census of Agriculture, and talking about black farmers. In 2012, the number of black farmers in the United States was 44,629 that were registered. This was a 12% increase in black farmers since 2007. Also, the total black farmers farmed with black principal operators has increased 9% from 2007 to 2012 when these stats were taken. So we see that there has been an increase of our farmers coming back south and farming. I want to play this clip of you, Reverend Hall, and something that you said, and
okay, and
get you to expound on that. If I can boot this thing up.
Hello, I'm Bishop David Allen Hall. I am the Ecumenical Faith Advisor for BFA, Black Farmers Agriculturalist Association. We are concerned at BFA that you will understand that there can be economic prosperity in the rural parts of America. In the Black Belt, where so many of our members live, a lot of them have migrated north, south, east, and west. But it's time to come on back home and to realize that that fallow ground, that land that our forebears farmed so nobly, can yet be prosperous, can yet bring us a good and meaningful living. We want you to know that the marginalized populations of our society now could find new lease on life and opportunity in farming. Those who have been incarcerated, undereducated, poorly trained, and underdeveloped can now look toward the farm as a new frontier where that you can gain economic prosperity. The technology of farming has certainly been upgraded. Things have changed considerably, and you will find that farming methodologies, tractors, equipment, plows, all of these things are the latest technology, and it will produce quantities, good yields of crops as never before. You ought to look into it, and you ought to join us at BFA and realize that there is opportunity in the related businesses that farming will bring to your understanding. Farming, it is agribusiness, and agribusiness is good business. So please join us and participate with us in a rediscovery of the farm life. It is indeed a good life.
Bishop Hall, talk about that, because, you know, I've seen some clips online of black farmers going to different events, and young people too. Learning about the latest equipment, learning about farming, and getting involved in farming. We see that the numbers is up. I mean, they're growing in reference to our farmers. Talk about the need for our people to come back and to get involved in farming. And is there a strategy among BFA or some of the other farm organizations, black farm organizations, to kind of target when our people come back south, target their interest, whether they're interested in farming, or even to approach, is there an approach for our young people to get involved in farming? Talk about it from your perspective. And I've seen some of the things online that some of the men are doing in a lot of the Black Belt states in reference to informing our young people about farming. But talk about it in reference to the clip.
I'd be glad to.
obviously, education and financing are two critical things for bringing black people into farming. And I would have you to know that there is an outstanding program wherein the government is offering microloans through USDA for people who want to do small farming. But when a tractor costs $250,000 and certain plows $80,000, $100,000, $125,000, when implements to defoliate or to or to safeguard against pestilence, etc., costing the tens and hundreds of thousands, you need more than a $50,000 microloan.
Mm-hmm.
This is why there has to be a collaboration with those who are on the farm. There has to be education that will bring information and entice those people not only to the work on the farm and the potential of the farm, but also the wherewithal to gain the resources and the money that it takes to do farming. Most of our black banks do not do agricultural loans because they are otherwise engaged in the housing market, church market, all those things that pertain largely to the urban setting. So we have to educate those people in those banks in how to gather resources and earmark them for farming. That's one answer. We have to educate them. And then we have to do the political thing. I'm glad in our lawsuit here that Congressman Cohen, who was the senator from West Tennessee here in the Memphis area, is now planning to put forward and has put forward measures that will be introduced in Congress that will help facilitate many of these same things in reference to the lawsuit and in reference to what black farmers and their needs happen to be. We have an outstanding opportunity, and you might look at those figures and say, there is an increase. Yes, there is an increase, but I don't want you to become so enthused with that because mm-hmm. the statistics indicate at one time we were totally neglected, shut out, run off, discouraged from following that life of farming. And now since the lawsuits and other things, they are allowing us to get some kind of information, but a lot of it is woefully inadequate. Certainly the financing is woefully inadequate. So there's got to be a combination of financial institutions, and black people ought to start owning their own financial institutions. Black people on the farm should likewise start owning their own financial institutions by us coming together. And that talk of panacea where we have and control and all of those things, it's more than talk. But we got to get down to the reality of us coming together. Now, I would say this, and I'll let Brother Burrell probably, he wants to jump in on this, that BFA's website, mybfa, mybfaa.us, demonstrates what we are doing in farming. You look at our equipment. You look at our land. You look at the young people associated on our website and on our Facebook page, etc., BFA Memphis. You will see that it is a major step up, and it takes financing, it takes education, it takes all that we can summon to make this thing happen. But the possibilities are there once we do it, and financing is just critical. It's so critical.
Brother Elliott, mm-hmm. Can I make a point to you in addition to what Dr. Hall just made reference to?
Certainly.
And in the beginning of your show, one of your clips talked about history and how important history is. Unfortunately, when we use the word or phrase farming in the African-American community, it conjures up a negative history. It conjures up images of servitude. It conjures up that dark night where we suffered, where we were oppressed. But we're going to have to be able to do what I think Booker T. Washington said years ago. We're going to have to make sure that we don't allow our grievances to overshadow our opportunities. There have been grievances in agriculture, of course. There was sharecropping. There was slavery. There was X. There was Y. What Dr. Hall is saying is we now need to start looking at the opportunities. We find that young people, 40 and younger, they don't see chopping cotton. They don't see working in tobacco fields. So when you say farming to that generation, what they see are these technologically advanced tractors. Most of the equipment and tractors that we promote in our organization there, and I don't want to use the word GMO, but these are GPS tractors. In other words, they steer themselves, and you almost have to you program them first. In other words, my father and your father wouldn't be able to operate a tractor today because the first thing you have to do is program them. So the young people are excited. They get out of their air-conditioned cars and they get into an air-conditioned tractor, and they have the screens in the in these tractors. They program them. We believe that in 10 years, your granddaughter, your grandson will be able to farm or program their farming operation before they go to class and hit a button, and the equipment will do the work. This is another reason we believe that competition is forcing us out of the industry, because the industry is profitable. As one of your callers said, yeah, so the motive to take land from black farmers is an economically driven motive. But we are going to have to be able to develop an appreciation for separating the baby, as it were, with the bathwater. Those of us who are in our 50s and 60s and 70s, we remember and talked about how the white man came onto the farm and treated us badly. They did all of that. But we can't, we hope we don't use that to dispel and otherwise not look toward the opportunities, as Dr. Hall was saying. So what we want to be able to do is for young people coming out of Philadelphia, out of New York, out of Los Angeles, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, this is one of the things we've done. Now, these individuals won't have the money. USDA talks about how many black farmers there are. The real question is, how many of those individuals did USDA make a loan to? And we're going to find that that number is disproportionately low compared to the numbers that they say. The African-American community may have to invest in the equipment. The African-American community may have to invest in the land and sublease that land, sublease that equipment out to these young farmers. The other thing we want to do is what we said earlier. We don't want to just exist at the production level, not that we have to apologize for farming. We want to be able to go from producing the product to processing that product to storing that product to transporting that product to our sisters and brothers. The best trade agreement we could have in the African-American community is for black folks in Mississippi to trade with black folks in Massachusetts, for black folks in L.A. to trade with black folks in Lower Alabama. So here again, it's interesting that USDA provides food stamps to black folk in Chicago, but they won't make a loan to black farmers in Georgia. As the kids on the street would say, what's up with that? So what we want to make sure of is that at a minimum, the black legislative community, our black congressperson, the black caucus, start to talk about opportunities that will allow us to take advantage of the other levels of agriculture. If my brother is farming, my sister should maybe doing the processing, my daughter, my nephew ought to be doing the accounting, keeping the books. There should be a black bank for us to go to. There should be a black trucking company for us to haul these commodities. There should be a black warehouse in New York and Philadelphia, and there should be a black person selling that food to another black person. And we can keep those dollars into the community. We turn those dollars over more time. So as Dr. King was saying, the solution is within. We're not going to expect other folk to do this for us. They haven't done it in 400 years. So we're going to have to get black folk together and say it's time for us now to put our differences aside and let's invest in one another. We're hoping black churches may say, well, you know what, I'm going to purchase this equipment, this plow, and let this group lease it. We are hoping that this black fraternity will invest in an implement and lease that implement to a black farmer. We are hoping that this association will say, what other commodities do we need? Do we need to come together and have a distribution center in Philadelphia and New York? It's just a matter of coming together to do these things. And we believe that it starts with what we are doing tonight. We've got to talk about it. So we
appreciate about our black athletes as well, sir. That's where there is a repository of wealth and influence. with our high-profile black athletes who have money, and I would think that there is a legitimate place for them to put it in the black community, in farms and ancillary and related businesses that will make industry and entrepreneurship commonplace amongst our ranks.
You know, Bishop Hall, that the Queen Sugar phenomena is just that. You have a group of black athletes or their wives in this particular case who came together to save their father's farm in Louisiana. We know that it's fictional. But here again, that's what we're going to have to talk about maybe with our other, ballers and entertainers and come back and create a financial atmosphere. One of the problems that we're having is in the African-American community is access to credit. Credit is the lifeblood. So we believe that here again, we have the capability. We have billionaires in our community. And I would submit to you that when we check their lineage, they're going to be three, no more than two generations from a black farmer. So these are some of the things that Bishop Hall is talking about. And we want to make sure that organizations like the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association can help develop those infrastructure models that will help us to go from here again to 40-plus thousand, as you say, in farming, and make sure that all of those individuals are contributing to the distribution and the retail of agricultural products in the otherwise urban areas throughout the country.
As you gentlemen were laying out what I conceptualize as the political economy that black people can be able to, using farming as the linchpin of defining that narrative of how we can create a political economic entity to support ourselves. And you brought up Queen Sugar. Do you think that the class action suit, as the sister was saying, getting the press, will be able to assist in creating the narrative where the history of farming isn't just negative, but showing that lineage at the same time being able to expand on these different various aspects of farming that is necessary for us to develop in the North and the South so that we won't be in competition, the North dealing with one element in this political economy and the South dealing with another element. Do you think the class action suit will, as a solution, can be helpful in that area?
I believe truly that it will be, because the class action suit, if we have our way, will embrace the criminal aspect of this thing. RICO was put together. The Racketeered Influence Corrupt Organizations Act of 1970 to really get into where legitimate businesses are taken over for criminal enterprises. This lawsuit is going to expose where even good companies may have been abused by the people that they've hired, people who have joined them and now abusing the folks at the local level. I think that this lawsuit will bring us the notoriety. Everybody's not going to like us, but they're going to have to understand one thing. We are business-minded, and we are serious about taking this problem and dealing with it, open, front, transparent as it would be, and making people understand, financiers, politicians, church people, regular folks, that we have a way now to remedy some of the nagging issues of black underemployment, education, where it has been misappropriated, giving people a second chance at life to do things on a farm or with an ancillary business. I think this lawsuit, as difficult as it is on us, I think there is an opportunity that is waiting to happen. We just have to be vigilant and stay with it, and try to rally as many people as we can around the country to our legitimate cause. We are redressing grievances of substance, and we got a lot on the line. But who hasn't had a lot on the line if you're going to make change? See where I'm going?
Oh, definitely.
Let me try to get a couple more calls before we lose our guest this evening. Let's go to 602. 602? 602.
Yes, good evening, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and good evening to the guests.
How are you, sir?
All right. Just want to say condolences, Brother Richard.
Thank you.
Passing your mother and your, you know, your family. In reference to what the farmers are saying, would some members of your organization be interested into expanding what you are talking about, but expanding it in Africa? Taking some of that technology, taking some of them young people that we have here and tying it with other young people in Africa, because I am part of certain farming groups and stuff like that, and they're looking for your technology. Because in fact, when Namibia got its independence, they had to go to Nigeria to get white farmers to come in to develop their farming program, because see, that's what's happening on the continent. A lot of the farms are even now in South Africa, they're taking back the farms. In Zimbabwe, they're taking back the farms, but they don't have the technology or the know-how to run the farm. So the farm run down. So would your group be interested into expanding on what you're talking about? So not only doing it here down south, but expanding it internationally, taking it to the motherland where we can truly be what we want to be. And I'll mute my phone and listen to the guest respond. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Dr. Hall, this is Thomas Burrell. It's interesting that the gentleman called and talked about taking it to the motherland. We had a conversation with the person from Africa a couple of weeks ago. I was in a farm meeting, and I shared with that person. I said, you know, my dream is one day, and Bifa's dream is one day, that he or Gan, we were to reverse the slave trade, as it were. 400 years ago, ships came to this country, and the cargo hulls were full of Africans to be brought here by to produce the land. I'd like to see the day that my granddaughter, your grandson, your niece will be able to have cargo ships going back to the motherland with grain to help feed people there. But more than anything, he talked about technology. And we believe this is an opportunity for black farmers in this country to be trained and use that expertise to go back and help develop farming in the motherland. We believe that this government, it makes trade agreements for individuals to come here from Korea, trade agreements for people to come over here from China and Japan and elsewhere. And not that I'm anti these individuals, but none of the trade agreements in this country will allow African Americans to reciprocate. Mm-hmm. We, as I said, this country is preventing black folks from even trading with our cousins in New York and Chicago. But here again, we think that as we start to talk about and continue to talk about this, those are some other opportunities. Yeah, you have a plethora, you have a superabundance of talent that has been handed down all the way back from Africa. Brother Ellie, you asked me the question earlier about how long have I been farming, and I'm the product of the progeny of generations and generations of agriculture. But all of those technological skills came to this country 400 years ago. So it would be very fitting for us now to start exporting, as it were, not only entertainment, exporting also athletes, but we should be exporting, as it were, our talents to go back and help to improve the conditions in Africa. So the answer to the brother's question, we thank him for that, is yes. We hope that this association will be able to, and we are in discussions about this very thing now, mm-hmm. about making sure we can reciprocate with black farmers in those other areas. And we believe this would be an excellent opportunity for us to present these to, here again, the Black Caucus. The legislation that we need to make that happen, the trade agreements that we need to make that happen, those are not difficult at all. NAFTA didn't include anything for African-Americans in Detroit in the automobile industry to go back to create, to take their skills to Mexico when General Motors went to Mexico, or when General Motors took and Ford took their plants to other places around the world. They didn't take the black employees. But at any rate, we believe that here again, agriculture will afford us that opportunity that we can take. take young black men and women here from Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama to Nigeria, to the Sub-Sahara, to Tanzania, Rwanda, and other places to help our sisters and brothers to develop agriculture back in the motherland.
And Brother Elliott, may I say something about that, because mm-hmm. really quickly here.
Mm-hmm.
This lawsuit, I hope, will not only pay off and help us put ourselves into proper motion, but it'll also send a sign to the large industrial agricultural industry. It takes equipment. And Brother Burrell and I went to China some years ago trying to work out some land things and some stuff, and we weren't really successful and we did a great job, too. I got to say, we pitched it well. But nothing is going to Africa. It needs to. And it takes money, big money. Agribusiness is good business. I would hope that these large manufacturing companies would say, you know what, I've heard what those black farmers say. They represent millions, if that, in fact, billions of dollars of possibilities in this country. But if they could go across the water back to Africa, right now with the political instability that we see now in the world, China is making inroads into the motherland.
Mm-hmm.
They are politically and economically doing things over there to supplant the spheres of influence that this government has. When will they wake up and understand that the future is going to be in Africa? The metals, the implements, those things that they need to make these fantastic cell phones and all the other stuff that we have, those things are over there. Plus, the land itself is fertile, and you've got people who are yet on the land. If BIFA could today get a contract to take farming implements over there, and those governments would work on our government without suspicion of black people in power to do it, I think it could open up a massive market. Yeah, I'm for that. I thank that brother for that phone call. He's visionary.
And I just like to add a cautionary note, because the class action suit that you're raising around these GMOs, because what we see also, the government and these private companies are pushing GMO seeds
right.
to Africa. So the educational awareness, when we're talking about solution, that the suit provides us in relationship to, as you say, how that product is in everything that we're eating, and even European countries don't want GMO food from the United States, but also how they are pushing those seeds into Africa, which might create the same challenge that you're experiencing. So the from a solutionary perspective and a cautionary perspective, your suit helps us here and on the continent be aware of who we are buying these seeds from and what we could possibly be looking at besides just potential trade agreements, which is a devastation of future feeding stock, farming stock, because it becomes the place that we're getting these seeds from. So I think that
you're right.
But what we're saying, though, the lawsuit could provide the resources. You don't have to take those resources and duplicate the person you're suing. In any lawsuit, basically a class action lawsuit, you're asking for not only compensatory damages, but you're asking for injunctive relief. That injunctive relief could be that these individuals, that the Stein seed companies would sign an agreement that says, no, we will allow you to produce seeds that they don't have to necessarily be GMO. So the lawsuit doesn't mean you have to replicate what the person you're suing is doing. You take those resources from that individual, and you are able to use those resources, whether they're heirloom seeds or otherwise. So I understand the caution, but I'm simply saying is that is not necessarily you're not tethered to doing what the person you are suing, in this particular case, the signed seed, is doing. You are not forced, or we would not be forced, to promote GMO seeds. As a matter of fact, as I said, the exact opposite could be the understanding and agreement that you would make with those large entities. You are suing them for them to provide resources for you to promote independence in the motherland, or even, for that matter, here in Mississippi or Tennessee. We could take the proceeds from these lawsuits and grow non-GMO food or organically grown food without Stein's permission. So here again, though, but I still think that one of the reasons the GMO seeds have been used, and one of the reasons they are rejected by foreign governments, is that they literally put small farmers out of business. Because what the GMOs will do, they will say, hey, yeah, now, whereas it took 100 farmers to produce X amount of food, use the GMO, and now 10 farmers can produce it. This is really where people like in the motherland in China don't want GMOs, because it will automatically put 75 to 90% of their farmers out of business, and they don't have alternative opportunities for those farmers. So they would rather use the heirloom seeds. But keep in mind, you would not, and I'm repeating myself, be limited or forced to follow the GMO technology simply because you would have sued a GMO manufacturer.
Let me squeeze a couple more of these in. What do you say, Richard?
Truly understood.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Let me try to squeeze a couple more. Let's go to 404. We'll put 404 back on hold. Let's go to 478. 478.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad we're having this discussion. It's very interesting and enlightening. I hope to the people involved in the lawsuit, Mr. Dr. Burrell and others, I hope you're successful. But I had a question. Do you, I saw one time on TV, it was mostly white people, and they went into urban neighborhoods to, like, back people with backyards who weren't doing anything with them, and just like, oh, we'll farm your backyard. Have you thought about doing things like that, like going into the urban community, like helping them set up like small farms, so like they would be like a satellite to you? You might lease the land and cultivate it on a smaller scale. That might create immediate jobs and then immediate access to at least maybe a black restaurant in that area that would use your produce.
That is an excellent question and an excellent observation, and the answer to that question is yes, yes. But keep in mind, again, notice she said something. She says white folks, and this is not a – and I don't think she meant this in a derogatory sense. I'm going to repeat what she said, and I don't necessarily mean it in a derogatory sense. What she said is white folks went into the black neighborhood. What other folks see a potential in our community, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, that we have, for whatever reason, rejected. As the old saying goes, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, agriculture. Other folk can see it. We are hoping that conversations like this will develop an appreciation for our community to see it. But remember, we said earlier, there was a mental block. There's a psychological block. We have not been able to develop an appreciation for separating the negativity of farming from its opportunities. But yes, it can be done. Not only that, it ought to be done. We have what are called food deserts in the African-American community. We have a lot of the major food retailers moving out, so there's a shortage of vegetables. There's a shortage of produce and a shortage of other foods that black folks now are going to have to drive across town to get. So, yes, that is an excellent opportunity. But as we said earlier, whether we are trading with our motherland in Africa or we trading with black people in Chicago or Philadelphia, we ought to be doing both. The African-American farmer, it would be a good tribute. It would be an excellent tribute to those who were brought to this country and farmed by force. And there's nothing we can do, this generation, to put salve on a wound or to wipe the tear away from the eye of a slave 200 years ago. But it's one thing that we can do. We can make sure that that slavery, that work on the farm was not in vain. And one of the ways we can do that is to make this industry more, not only it already is profitable, but to garner a new respect among the African-American community. That would be an excellent tribute to those who were brought to this country and forced to work the lands by force, as it were, to show them that now your sweat, your contribution paved the way for us to be able to do things for our community that heretofore we have not been able to do, and the stamp of appreciation that's inherent in doing that on their behalf. So that's an excellent question, and I hope that the answer is yes, this association would be willing to do it, and we hope that associations within the urban area, the black churches in Chicago, black churches and organizations in New York, one of the largest, I'm told, distribution centers of food, Brother Elliot, is right there in Philadelphia and up in Hunts Point in the Bronx in New York. But here again, because of this post-slavery dramatic syndrome, we have that black box. So when you talk about farming, again, it conjures up images of servitude. And for that reason, the majority of our black leaders are of that age, are of that category. So, you know, when you say farming, they're not as receptive to it as other people or even young black folk. But yes, that's the road that we should be on. And I think it's just a matter of getting there vis-a-vis conversations like we're having tonight.
Let me try to clear up this board before we wind things down. Let's go back to 404 and see if they're there. Let's go to 4. No, let's okay. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. Hey, hi, Brother. Welcome back, Brother Richard.
Thank you. Good to be back.
More than welcome, my brother. Yeah, and to Mr. How you doing, Mr. Burrell?
Thank you,
Mr.
sir.
Carr, you welcome, yeah. And Ms. Rogers. I just want to say first, I'm going to, my brother from Virginia called in and stuff, this Brother Otis. I don't have a lot of money, but I will, whatever little bit I do have, Mr. Burrell and Bishop Hall, Ms. Rogers, I'm going to make little donations here and there to the association because I support what y'all are doing because it's so important. And, you know, I just have a few comments before y'all wonderful gentlemen, you know, gentlemen leave and the sister leave, is to say that, you know, Mr. Burrell, you mentioned the Black Congressional Black Caucus. See, that's one of my pet peeves because I'm saying to myself, you would think they would be on the forefront of this. They should be quote having news about y'all lawsuit and the importance of passing legislation and pressing their colleagues in the Democrat Party, that's mainly the white colleagues, as well as the so-called ones in the Republican Party. I don't know if they'll get much traction from them, but at least put the issue out there. But they definitely should be pressing the Democrat Party. I'm talking about people like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the congressional, because be pressing them to support the black farmers in this lawsuit and for the black farmers to get the resources they need. That's why I have such low regard for them, because they not on the case. They busy out here. And again, I'm not saying that they would not support what happened in the border with children being in the parents from their past. That's important. No question about that. But use that same energy to not only support our Mexican brothers and sisters, you know, that's being mistreated by the Trump administration, but also support your black farmers as well. I mean, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, right? So I don't know why they can't do both, you know. And the fact that you think you say anything from the Congressional Black Caucus about the black farmers' plight, to me, that's very disheartening. And like Brother Ralph has said earlier, I know here in Philadelphia, I can't speak for what Ms. Rogers said in the papers that she's talked about. Well, I know here in Philadelphia, the two major papers in Philadelphia, as well as the black newspaper, I didn't see one article about y'all lawsuit here. Not one article, and I think that's disgraceful. Not one article in the two major papers here in Philly, as well as the black newspaper. Not one article at all about the plight of the black farmers, their lawsuit or the plight. And to me, that's not good. That is not good at all. But, you know, we have to keep on, we have to persevere and keep on pushing to make sure that the story get out there and that y'all do what y'all have to do, because it's important, because we have to get young people, like you said, Mr. Burrell, Mr. Hall, we have to get young people involved in agriculture. It's important because, like you said, with the new technology now, you know, these young people, they down with the new gadgets, the new technology, so that would be the motivation for them to get involved, because at the end of the day, we have to be able to feed ourselves. So no question about that. So I support what y'all doing. I'm gonna keep y'all in prayer, and I'm gonna, like I said, with my few dollars, I can send back to y'all a check or whatever. I will do so because what y'all doing is definitely is wonderful, and it's definitely you know, sanctioned by the Creator. Because like I say, you know, God, you know, made the earth, He made the water, the crops, everything, and we only doing our God given right to make sure that we carry doing what He wants us to do. So y'all got my blessings, y'all got my support, and I want to thank you for y'all for listening to me tonight.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Let's go to 646.
Yes, good evening to you, Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard, my condolences to you and the family, and hopefully you will continue to take a couple of days off from the dead. to your guests, first and foremost, we must understand one thing, that what you and your cohorts are doing is some of the most important work for our people at this present time. Because I think what's really happening, and you may not see it, but I hope you understand what I'm about to say to you. It is exposing our people to who our real true leaders are and who's really backing the progress of African people. Because it seems to me, I don't know if I'm right or I may be wrong, that these so-called civil rights groups, may I ask you before I go forward, are they supporting you in your cause?
Bishop Hall?
Yes. We have many from various groups. Nobody officially has said, we support you. But I have had conversation with, as the ecumenical advisor, with people from NAACP, with people from other groups that have a national focus. But if you're saying, has anybody come out and say, we give you the full weight and measure of our credibility and support you across the board, that's not happened yet.
Well, you know, I have to go forward, sir, and ask you, what the hell is taking them so long? What's the reason why they just basically can't stand up and say that your organization and your group has been mistreated for the last, since I've understood this issue, it's been for the last 12 years. Now, you had the black president in office for close to the last 8 years, and so we would say, in essence, 10 years, and I know that there was a lawsuit. And I know that based on that lawsuit, y'all wasn't treated fairly while he was the president. Now, you know, sir, I'm going to have to say this to you. It's time that you confront these organizations and make them get off the pot and move us forward. Because I don't know if you really understand what is happening to us as African people. We are getting caught up in the situation now of this whole nonsense of a global society or a global country. And in the process, I hope that you understand what I'm about to say to you. Over the last 100 years, every type of movement that there has been between African people and other groups, the other groups have always benefited in the end. And we as a people have never benefited at all. And it seems like we don't have no problem with it. It seems like we're just happy to be a part of the discussion. And we don't want to confront these people who are basically, when it's all said and done, screwing us over because we want to be the nice guy. But I'm telling you, if we keep on letting it happen, because every other ethnic group in this country is moving forward, and we're the only ethnic group that is still begging the daddy and still begging this white man to move us forward as a people, because we don't want to confront nobody. until you confront the United States government, until you confront these black organizations, until you confront these white farming institutions, and make them become accountable also, because the same thing is happening to them. But as you would know, when they address their issues, they get some sort of resolution to it.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, Jay, let me say this.
May I answer that?
Yeah, but let me say this, Bishop Hall. If you heard the men this evening, Jay, they're confronting this issue. On a legal front, they're confronting this seed company. They've been confronting the federal government, the USDA.
Right.
And plus, they're talking about solutions for our community as far as teaching other young people farming. I've seen a lot of the videos where they're showing young people about farming. It's a lot of young people involved.
I've seen them too.
Okay. So, I mean, they're working.
No, I understand what they're doing.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, I understand what they're doing, and I agree with everything that they're doing. But you know something, to be honest with you, Elliot? You got to go to a gunfight with the shotgun, not the pop gun. And this is a situation to where as we need the shotgun. Because what's being done to these people is egregious. And everybody knows that it's egregious. And it just has to be a real serious all-out confrontation. And, you know, what they're doing is great. I have no issue with what they're doing other than the fact that they're going with a pop gun. It's shotgun time for this. Because it's not going to get better as long as we keep on, in a sense, trying to get along and be passive, brother.
But in this Time for Awakening format, where the shotgun and it's being loaded, and what it's being at call to issue is whether when they shoot, which is us, the audience of the Time for Awakening, will the pellets hit what we're trying to hit? So it takes each one of us in our own way assisting the association to be able to hit that target. Not necessarily the association itself, but each one of us who believe that this is a just cause and a righteous movement towards our political and economic freedom, or at least independence, because of all the things that you said, that we have to be the ones. And what's being called and challenging, as I see it, is not what they do, but if they informing us, is what we will do, mm-hmm. and showing the strength of support for an association that is saying that our core economic engine has been historically the farm, and we should maintain that. It gets on us.
Yeah.
In the North, particularly,
yes.
You know, what are we doing? Because we ain't out there with them, either on them computerized tractor or out there sowing by physical form the seed. But we can do in other ways to support. And I think that that's just also important for us to continue to, as you bring up, to continue to put out.
Hey, let me ask him this one last question in regards to a solution. Sir, have y'all put together a collective to where as the fruits and vegetables that you grow could maybe be moved to major cities in the East?
Well, if you remember, I used a phrase earlier when we said that we are trying to develop an infrastructure, vertical and horizontal integration. I think I said something to the extent that historically, we never got past the production level. That was by design. And so we never were able to process the fruits and vegetables. We could grow the fruits and vegetables. But why is it the fruits and vegetables that your cousin in Mississippi grew didn't make it to Michigan and Minnesota and Massachusetts? Because there was discrimination at those levels. This is why here again, there was such a negative a view of farming, because all we saw was the hard work in the fields. By design, we picked the cotton, but we buy cotton shirts, we buy cotton sheets. But if my grand grandfather was a cotton farmer. My granddaughter ought to be a salesperson selling cotton linen. My great-grandson ought to be selling Tommy heel figure shirts. If my mother was basically and grandmother scrubbing the floors at a local, shall we say, restaurant, then we should be owning, my great-granddaughter ought to be owning a fast food. So, but discrimination prevented us from going from where food was produced to where you are saying, customer, it is being consumed. And that's what we are saying. We are creating that vertical and horizontal integration. We want to be able to make sure we've got a farmer in Mississippi or Georgia who can produce the vegetable. We've got another black person who is storing that vegetable. We got another black young lady who is trucking those vegetables. We've got warehouses in Philadelphia. We'll have distribution centers in the Bronx. We'll have distribution centers in L.A. One of the things that other foreigners have been able to do, particularly in the hair care industry, is they set up and understood distribution.
Yes.
So in other words, what they're doing, they make sure that if we're going to take over the wig business in Memphis and Manhattan, we have distribution systems. Other individuals understand logistics, but in order to take advantage of logistics, you still have to have financing. So it's not a matter that we don't have farmers producing fruits and vegetables. Is that we don't have access to, for a variety of reason, of the infrastructure that will allow me to take my tomato now from Tennessee to you, sir, in Philadelphia or New York and Cleveland. These are some of the challenges that we have to work on, and that's what this association is doing.
Where are we at with that right now? Where are we at in that development right now?
Let me give him this example, Brother Burrell.
And thanks for your call, Jay, because we're running out of time.
Soybean last year, a young black man, we used his company to take our soybeans to the market, to put them in the granary. And he said this to me, I thank God that I'm looking at a black producer, and I thank God that I'm not on the tail end of the business, because before you, my trucks ran when everybody else got occupied and too busy, and I only got what was left over. I built my business on catching what was left over. He said, for the first time, I got first pick of the crop. Now, what he said was this: you provided me with a financial opportunity to put my trucks on the road and to deliver your grain that you've harvested. Heretofore, I only got that opportunity when all my other white competitors had their trucks full and they just needed, they just had to use me. We're trying to put black farmers and entrepreneurs in that business so that we relate to one another and we become primary. And as he grows, we grow. And as the next one grows, the next one will grow. We want to get there. What Brother Burrell is saying, we have the seed for that, but we've got to build the structure. What a superstructure. And we got faith that we can do it.
Thank you for your call, Brother Jay.
Sounds great.
Peace. You know, before I let you men go, you raised an excellent example of the Asians here in this country. They have totally, if you remember back in the 70s when Soul Train had the show and Johnson Products, and blacks controlled that hair care, the hair care industry.
Yes, sir.
On the different levels that you're talking about. The Asians have come in, and not only the production of those products, they've taken over the retail and the distribution. They're doing just what you just said that we have to do. We produce on the farms. We see that. But the production, the retail and the distribution, that's what you're saying that we really need to do, and the men have been doing it to a certain extent or attempting to do it now. So
yes, you know, we're going to have to create what we refer to as that infrastructure. In other words, if there were 10 members in my family, historically all 10 of us would be at the farm level. What we have to do now is two of us farm, the other two process it, the other two store it, the other two warehouse it, the other two does something else, and the other two sells. And, oh, by the way, the other two, I think I'm up more fast in, will consume. So then we're turning that dollar over. more times in our community. The foreigners, when they come in, one of the reasons that is easier for them to set up shop in our community is because they have the support of that infrastructure.
Yeah.
They have banking institutions that specialize in making them loans. They have the distribution system, so they buy in bulk. They buy in wholesale. I submit to you that the same person selling wigs in South Philadelphia is associated with the guy that's selling wigs here in Memphis, Tennessee.
Most definitely.
So when that container comes from Asia, when that container...
Most definitely.
They're going to benefit from that. So they understand that distribution outlet. And that's what here again, we're going to have to be able to develop an appreciation for those collateral, and I think Bishop Hall said, ancillary entities in between.
Yes.
Great. Let me go back and just take this one last call because maybe they're here now because that's the last one on the board. Let's go back to 404. 404? 404. Okay, maybe that. Okay, that's it for. excellent conversation this evening, Brother Richard. Listening to the man talk about what they're doing, not what they want to do, but what they're doing. We have an obligation here in the North and other areas that have heard us to join in. If we're not on the farms, we can help in other ways. Bishop Hall, Mr. Burrell, tell the listening audience how they can get involved, where they can find the websites, where they can join, anything that you need to let us know before you leave us.
Yes, our website is www.mybfaa.us. More importantly, you can call this office at 901-522-8880. 901-522-8880.
Okay.
Dr. Hall, did you have any comments regarding?
No, I will. If from a theological perspective, we're going to do this with the prayer of people who see the vision and who understand the struggle. Their prayer and their goodwill, word of mouth, will help us overcome. I want to leave that because we are people of faith.
Listen, I want to thank you, men, for being with us this evening. Mr. Burrell, you got my number, you got my email. Always keep us abreast of what's going on in reference to this lawsuit against Stein for the fake seed that was distributed to our farmers. And you can come on and give us updates anytime you see fit. Just reach out to me and I'll make room on the program.
Thank you, Brother Elliot.
Thank you, sir.
And you too, Bishop Hall. The same thing.
Yes,
any young people because I've seen you working with some of the young people in the videos. I've seen you with your grandchildren on the farm.
Man, they love it. They love it.
From Buffalo, New York. The boys are from Buffalo. They can't wait when school is out to come down south, as it were.
Well, see, that's what we're talking about. That's what's going to create that next generation that we need. So we can, the caller out of Memphis, in fact, he called out of Memphis, that mentioned about us working on the continent. That's the dream. Your grandchildren will see that dream forth that he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to thank you, men, for your work and what you're doing. And like I said before, the door is always open to you where you can come on, give us the community, the Time for Awakening listening audience updates. And thank you again for your work.
Thank you, Brother Elliot.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Brother Richard.
All right. Take care.
Yes.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll wind up the program.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media. part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP of the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Does no one care about African Americans murdered in Jeffersonville, Indiana? Papa John founder John Shatner resigned as chairman of the board of the Pizza franchise after comments he made in a conference call angered other board members. He now regrets resigning and claims he did not use the N-word in a negative way when making comments about KFC founder Colonel Sanders not facing backlash for using the word as a slur against black people. However, that is not the most appalling thing Shatner said on the call first reported by Forbes. In every article I have read about the call on other outlets, including the black targeted The Root, are leaving out Shatner's claims that African Americans were dragged to their deaths behind trucks in his hometown of Jeffersonville, Indiana. Shatner did not say what time period these murders occurred, but considering he was born in 1961, one could assume it could have been during the 70s or 80s and possibly later. White news outlets are seeking to white out his comments about the murders of black people is something they can only answer. But since there is not a statute of limitations on murders or civil rights violations, it seems that Shatner should be answering questions from law enforcement about those murders. To date, not even Jeffersonville officials or local civil rights groups like the NAACP are raising the questions surrounding Shatner's knowledge of racially motivated murders. The lack of attention paid to this issue is very troublesome when we know that many of the murders and lynchings of black Americans have gone uninvestigated, even though many of the perpetrators are still walking around among us, possibly sporting Donald Trump's Make America Great Again apparel. Justice demands an investigation. This has been Scotty Reed of BTR News reporting. Support independent media today by giving a tax-deductible donation to the Black Talk Media Project, which has been providing public digital media since 2008.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guest this evening, President of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, Incorporated, Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell, and also activist farmer Bishop David Hall was with us. Richard.
Yes, sir.
Interesting discussion with the men, mm-hmm. talking about the problems that still faced from that, you hate to say bogus lawsuit, bogus settlement. That our farmers have still been ripped off by lawyers and still never got the satisfaction of this discrimination that the government put against them. But now this double barrel of this Stein Seed Company, billion-dollar industry, selling black farmers a phony GMO seed. They're fighting on two fronts. Mm. They're fighting the legal front. And they're also doing what needs to be done on the grassroots front, so to speak. They're holding training sessions. I'm going to send you some of the videos that were shared to me, by Mr. Burrell. They're holding training sessions for young black farmers, showing them how to mechanize their farm, similar to what that clip I played with Dr. King, and that was from the 60s. Mm. Showing young blacks how to mechanize their farms. And believe me, some of those farmers that I've seen in the video, Richard, they're not, I think our vision of farming, because I heard a young lady call out of Atlanta. I think our vision of farming might be a little amiss, because these men control hundreds, if not thousands, of acres of land. Some of those big combines that I saw, man, Richard, they're not joking.
Yeah,
these men are farmers,
right? They're you know, big commercial farmers, and you know, Elliot, they also provided a political economic vision in relationship. Is not just about farming, you know, as you say, when we think of just growing the crops, it's the production, the distribution,
exactly.
The whole aspect.
They're talking about the whole aspect. Yep.
Yeah. And recognizing that it can be a element, another leg in the political economy of Black America that isn't being projected. That vision of it, that narrative of it, isn't being projected of how it can provide the support for us. So, you know, among other industries that we should naturally control, not be asking, but control. But you know, Elliot, the thing that I guess I'm focused on that I would like the Time for Awakening audience. The two things is that we have to be the ones to support them, mm-hmm. to make that, what he said, the infrastructure come into being. And providing this kind of communication is one way of doing that. But the other thing is that we can't overlook, and Jay touches, and sometimes I feel a little hurt, but it's true. When they say it's systemic discrimination, this started from the point when we were captives to today, to what he, that class action lawsuit. Because if it comes out that it was intentional, it was intentional.
Oh, it had to be.
You know what I mean?
It had to be. And this is just me and you talking.
You know, and so the intentional destabilization of us creating on our own will, even with Booker T. Washington, even with Elijah Muhammad, these were intentionally destabilized economic formations, even with Garvey. The government and private individuals, the military included, intentionally stopped Black people from creating an infrastructure to do for itself. If we overlook that, then we are, yes, we're walking around with a thumb up our butt.
Yeah, and, you know, Malcolm said in that video clip, audio clip that I played, about we're facing a government conspiracy. Listen, this Stein seed, from what the men stated, it's a $1 billion mm-hmm. industry. Now, you mean to tell me a $1 billion industry that provides seed, as far as I know, and I'm no, you know, government guru or whatever, but as far as I know, and from my limited knowledge, that anything dealing with food or food consumption has to either go through FDA or USDA. It has mm-hmm. to be inspected and certified. So you're talking about a $1 billion industry that, okay, the government had to look at these seeds. They had to test the seeds that these farmers got. I mean, who Stein made seeds and just put it out there without it being government inspected? Something is wrong there.
And in a world where you have, again, we can't lose sight to the point that you made, economic warfare, yes, they can. Because depending on who you sell your seeds to, who you don't want to, you don't do it just for you because you made the money off of the seeds. You do it for a broader economic concern.
Okay.
You know, that you would have just like, look, we just passed budgets. I mean, we didn't do it, but where our tax dollars go to a military that's building armament every day. They ain't using it, but they're building it. So when they want to use it, they can. Or let's put it in a historical perspective. We know on the continent, and when the Europeans from England went to Africa, they sold them shoddy guns. They sold them shoddy. They knew it was shoddy. Right? That's what they sold them in order. So that was a deliberate effort. They produced the guns, or they produced guns that were shoddy, and they knew they were shoddy, and they sold it to the kings for a part of the trade, to create the trade relationship. So this ain't no new thing.
I know it. Okay. I'm glad you put that historical perspective on it. Wow. Before we leave tonight, I want to give the lineup for next week. And it's similar as always for right now. We've got some new programs in the pipeline. But Monday starts out with African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday afternoon at 6 o'clock, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening, and from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. Again, they're in their replay of Season 1. I think Season 2 will be starting soon with new programming. And you can view some of the episodes on timeforanawakening.com in the archives or the podcast of Let's Buy Black 365 Connect. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC. On Wednesday night, 8 to 10. Friday, Time for Awakening is back at 8 o'clock. Friday evening from 8 to 10 with Friday Open Forum. Saturday is SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try.